Turns out, we've been dancing for the joy of it for ages. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich told Steve Paulson that dance has been part of religious festivals for centuries.
One of the best ways people have had a good time for thousands of years is by gathering together and bringing in a mix of things like music, dance, feasting, possibly drinking, costuming, masking. Those are the sort of universal ingredients of traditional festivity.
And you make the case that these kinds of festivities were widespread throughout, particularly the ancient world and throughout what we might call traditional cultures today. I mean, it's pretty much commonplace.
Universal. For example, when European explorers, missionaries, and conquerors spread out around the world from the 16th to 19th centuries, they found these things, to their horror, I should mention, in such different places as Alaska, among Inuits, among Sub-Saharan Africans, North Africans, Polynesians, Plains Indians. As I said, the Europeans saw this as devil worship and savagery and lewd and obscene, and because they had kind of, you know, repressed their own traditional festivities.
Well, and you're talking about losing yourself. I mean, engaging in ecstatic experiences, sometimes mind-altering experiences. That's probably what a lot of these Europeans found threatening.
They found the whole thing threatening, but especially the fact that many indigenous people's rituals would culminate in people going into a state of trance. Ecstatic trance, which they might subjectively describe as union with a deity or the mastery of some sort of healing power.
Well, this really goes against the Western model that we have for happiness. I mean, happiness is supposed to be something that we experience on the individual level, but that's not at all what you're talking about.
That's right. A lot of the current emphasis on happiness and courses in positive psychology, they're very much focused on the individual and sort of adjusting your own mood, somehow monitoring and managing your own mood to be more upbeat. But, you know, what they're missing, of course, is this very ancient, going back to prehistoric, technique that humans have had for creating that sense of uplift and joy going all the way to ecstasy.
Well, you tell a fascinating history going back to ancient times. For instance, the ancient cult around the Greek god Dionysus, whom you call the first rock star.
His appeal in ancient Greece was primarily to women. At some signal, women would drop their domestic chores, run outside, go into the forest, into the mountains even, for days and nights of revelry as a form of worshiping Dionysus, who was the god of collective ecstasy. You know, the rock star reference came in because I found some suggestions that the signal to women to do this might be the arrival in town of a wandering musician slash magician slash healer, whatever, who would call them to the worship of Dionysus.
Well, I want to pick up some of the history that you trace, and one of the most fascinating episodes is in the Middle Ages. And you say that there was one point in, I guess it was 15th century France, when one out of every 4 days was a public holiday, more or less set aside so that people could go out and party.
Not counting Sundays. Maybe, you know, by using the colloquialism, go out and party, it makes it sound too informal. People prepare greatly for these sorts of events. Costumes have to be made. Dance steps have to be rehearsed. Good things to eat have to be cooked up. Yes, people in that period did not live to work.
Well, this was also a time of heavy Christianity. I mean, all of Europe was strongly Christian at this time, and I would think the church would have found this kind of revelry threatening.
Well, the church is a complicated story because Christianity was pretty much a danced religion as far as the common people went. Into the late Middle Ages, there weren't pews in the Catholic churches in Europe at that time. You find the bishops again and again denouncing women especially for dancing in churches. So it was pretty common. But then the church tries to drive that out. They drive it out by saying, okay, you can do this, but not on church property. You have to have your festival in the streets, in the public square, or so on. You know, and then Christianity gets progressively even more antagonistic till the Reformation, of course, when you have John Calvin, Calvinist Protestantism outlawing, you know, banning dance altogether. as well as, of course, costuming and drinking and the rest of it.
You know, one thing I find interesting about this whole history that you've outlined, and really, to some degree, you're making the case for the virtues of transcendent experience. Usually, the people who talk about this are religious. You are not religious. Clearly, there is a religious dimension to a lot of this history that you're describing, but it seems like you're trying to reclaim this from another angle, maybe from a more political perspective.
Well, that's an interesting observation. This whole experience of this research made me reconsider the way we use terms like religion and faith. Because what I was coming up against was this tradition of ecstatic danced religions, which do not involve faith. You don't have to believe in a deity because you directly experience that deity through the ritual.
So is this basically about joy? I mean, is that what you're talking about? Or are you saying there is a real element of political transformation here, a way of common people finding their voice and rising up?
Oh, yeah. I mean, clearly I was fascinated by the race and the class dimensions of this. And the association in the last 4 or 5 centuries between these kinds of public festivities of the common people and uprisings, political uprisings. So, for example, in the 19th century Caribbean, slave revolts there'd be a remarkable coincidence between their occurrence and carnival. Within Europe, it's not really till almost the 19th century when you begin to have real, quote, political uprisings that don't include all these elements of dancing and costuming and so forth.
Barbara Ehrenreich's book is called Dancing in the Streets.